broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen. This is Matt Sorensen, excited to be with you today. You know, this show is about saving taxes, protecting your assets, building wealth. And today we're going to, you know, try and hit the trifecta there, as it may be, the Holy Trinity, maybe, however you see it. And we're just trying to deliver, whatever you want to call it.
I like that, Matt. Last week you were, you know, celebrating Wayne's World 25th anniversary, and you just went to the Holy Trinity, man.
Yeah, you know.
I like it. You're all over the board.
I got depth.
Broad range of listener options.
You know, I like to play to all crowds, so, you know. But, well, I'm excited, Mark, for today's show. I mean, I got a cool legal tip I'm hoping to give, and we got a really interesting topic, one a lot of our clients are very familiar with and have a lot of personal experience with too, I think.
Yeah, this is going to be a great topic. I love the show, and I want to give a shout out to all of our listeners. Our listening base is growing every week. We're so grateful for many of you that find this to be a great tax and legal resource. We hope that you'll share the link to the show with your friends and family. And if any of you haven't already signed up for our weekly newsletter, you can get to refreshyourwealth.com, and sign up for a free weekly newsletter with tax tips, videos, deadlines, important information you should be up to speed on with your business. And you also get a free copy of Matt Sorensen's ebook, as well as a copy of my newest ebook. And just that alone, just sign up for that. It's quite the special.
Yeah, that's stuff we charge $400 an hour for. I mean, people pay us all day long. They're banging on our door for that. And we're just giving it away to our listeners because we love you.
Just giving it away. Well, and talking about giving away, we got a great topic today we want to give away, and just a lot of information I think many of you are going to find helpful. We have a special guest. We're going to be talking about family businesses. Mark Morris is going to be joining us, an expert in this. Yes, another amazing Mark is going to join the show.
And this is going to be hard for me, huh? I got to deal with two Marks today. Yeah, I marked my calendar. Right. I marked my calendar for this date. So.
No, I like good stuff. Well, I'll introduce Mark a little later. He's got an illustrious bio, and many of you are going to be impressed to hear what he's got to say about family-owned businesses. And some of you out there, I know you're thinking about being in business with family, or you're already taking the plunge. We're going to give you some tips here to help avoid some of those pitfalls and some good practical stories and tips and strategies. So.
Yeah, family businesses have created a lot of dynasties and wealth and a lot of heartache too, let's be honest. A lot of lawyers have made a living on family businesses, you know, fighting battles.
That's a good one. Yeah, we love family businesses, folks. Right. Call us. We'll set you up, and 6 months later, we'll tear you apart.
Exactly. We'll make money on the way in, on the way out.
Matt, it was funny. I had this friend the other day. He was telling me how he just got divorced. And you know what, Mark? Next time I'm about ready to get married, just hit me over the head. I'm just going to go out there and find a woman I hate and just write her a check for half of my income. So.
Oh, that's
just, oh, I was like, sad. Oh, man.
Oh, this is jaded. That's a jaded view on life. But hey, but we want to talk about, I mean, let's be honest. I mean, there's some things you want to avoid, some stories and examples you can maybe learn from, and some maybe rules of the road to follow with your business. So, and I've had a lot of interesting insight on this. In fact, my legal tip that I want to give today kind of has some overlap. So I'm ready to just throw down a legal tip if you're feeling tipsy.
Okay, man, if you're going to take the bull by the horns, let's do a legal tip.
All right. Okay.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
Now, my legal tip for today, I want to talk about succession planning. Now, sometimes your business plan needs to be coordinated with your estate plan. And if you care about your business and your family, that time is all the time, all right?
Not you have this. To choose which one you care more about. You have to care more about your business or your family, or does it matter?
Yeah, either one. If you have a care of either one, you need to make sure. Because let's be honest, a lot of people do love their business. You want to see it succeed after you pass on. A lot of you love your family. You don't want them to hate life when you pass on and not know what the heck to do. So I had a consult with the client a couple weeks ago that was very interesting, who was stuck with this problem. And this client had an operational small business. They did some sales and marketing services that was very successful. And they also had some real estate rentals. And they were really trying to grapple with, how do I deal with this? And they had a lot of frustration because their typical estate plan that they had already set up was very cookie cutter in the sense that it said, hey, when I pass away, give one third to this kid, one third to that kid, one third to the next kid. And it was kind of, you know, something normal you'd see. But they really wanted to dive into it more and say, all right, this child, they had three kids, this child is really more involved in my day-to-day business. This child has some rental properties themselves. They may want my rental properties. This child really, frankly, shouldn't get anything, but they're my child, and they have no interest in anything except cash. But this client was trying to be very proactive after having an estate plan that was not proactive in coordinating this back together. And so the first step and things to think about when you're thinking about your estate plan and your business plan is we want to make sure they're coordinated. Does your estate plan own your business entities? That's just rule of thumb number one. We want to make sure that's happening. If you set up an estate plan with us, we're going to do it. Or any decent lawyer should be doing that. But the second thing and the next place to go, which was this client's conundrum and what they're trying to work through was, how do I make sure that that happens seamlessly? I'm going to be, you know, 6 foot under the ground, so to speak. How do I make sure that my kids, who I want them to carry on this business, I want the success that I've built up to carry on, how do I make that happen when I've passed away? And it was really a lot more of just training and getting them involved and things like that as much as it was a legal documentation standpoint. So I want you to keep on the tip of your mind as you're thinking about your business. And today's topic is, some of you may be a little bit older in life and none of us are invincible. We could pass on early, but particularly if you're older on in life, you have an established business, really want to think about succession planning, make a strategic, active plan to pass this on to the next generation. Start getting your kids or whoever your heirs are going to be involved so they know what could be coming down the pipe.
Wow. Matt, fantastic tip. Ooh, deep. It's deep.
I try.
Yeah. No. And, you know, so many, you know, 50% of Americans don't even have a will, let alone a full estate plan that's coordinated with their business plan.
Yeah.
I just met with a client, last month, sat down for dinner, and his business worth several $1 million. And it wasn't even mentioned in his estate plan. And so we went through and talked about who would take over the business, what role family members would play,
mm-hmm. That's
what
potential awesome.
Estate tax there could be. And he and his wife were just like, wow, oh my gosh, we needed to do this. And it mm-hmm. it really takes a burden off your shoulders to do some of that.
See, that's what I'm talking about. That's what I'm talking about right there.
There you go. Taking it to the hoop. All right. Well, I've got – now, normally, as many of you know, my tax tips are a lot more exciting than Matt's legal tips. But
true.
I don't know about
it's
this
true.
Week. I think Matt, yours is going to – I think, Matt, today your legal tip's going to win the prize. So, all right, let's start out with an awesome tax tip.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
Okay, well, what I want to talk about is the sexy topic of extensions. Okay, I'll leave it at that. Yeah, that was a little. Okay, now here's the thing.
No sexual innuendo meant, right?
No innuendos there. We're talking about.
The way you're laughing. Okay.
See, we try to keep you. Some of you are paying attention. All right, so this is about your personal or business extension. This is a big deal. Many of you don't know LLCs. Matt, I've been on the phone with clients for 3 weeks getting these shocked gasps. Many people don't realize that your LLC, a two-member LLC, three-member LLC, if you have an LLC with more partners than one, your LLC deadline for tax filing changed. This year, 2017, it is due March 15th. And I had a Freudian slip there, but it doesn't even roll off my tongue because for years it's been April 15th, but it's now March 15th for LLCs. Now that's when your S corporation is due as well. I was on a phone call this afternoon and a client was like, when's my S corp due? I'm like, in 15 days. What? You know, so you have to file an extension for your LLC. Now, let me give a couple little important details. If you have a single member LLC, you will report that with your 1040 on a Schedule C or a Schedule E or Schedule F, whatever you're doing, a single member LLC will be reported on your personal return. So don't stress. For all of you out there that have an LLC, you own 100% of it, don't freak out. You're just going to report it on your 1040. April 15th. I have one more little caveat at the end of this. But if you have a two or three member or four member LLC, the deadline for filing is now March 15th. Now, you can get an extension, and I love it. You file an extension. Your tax return would not be due until September 15th, 6 months extension. But if you do not file for an extension, the fee is $195 per month per partner. That's the penalty, $195 per partner per month. I just want to give you a quick example here of running some numbers. This could get crazy. So if you have three partners in an LLC and you guys are late, even let's say heaven forbid 10 months late, that could be a $5,850 penalty, $5,000 in penalties just because you're like, oh, I didn't know my LLC was due. This is a big deal, folks. So get with your accountant. You can call our office. We'll file an extension for you for your LLC or your S corp or both. And then that gives you until September 15th to get finished. Now, little, you know, tidbit that could save you thousands of dollars. Now, I want to make two little side notes. Number one, remember, folks, extending your tax return is fine. You actually reduce your chances of an audit. You reduce your chance of an audit. And by filing extension, it gives you more time to prepare your records and do a better job so that you can get more write-offs. You can comb through all those credit card statements, comb through all the bank statements and find those deductions that you may have lost because you're in a rush. Don't be in a rush. The W-2 employee is all anxious to file the return as soon as possible to get a refund. Business owners, take your time. Do it right. I'd say 70% of our clients or more file an extension. It's okay. Take your time. Final tidbit, Matt, don't forget about those states. For any of you that are in a state that has excise taxes, California is a good one. You've got to file a state return even with a single member LLC. And there's penalties for not filing those on time. So make sure that you get with your accountant, you let them know you've got a single member LLC. You can get on the state website. Just for example, California, again, Franchise Tax Board, go to the website, look at the rules for a single member LLC and filing. And different states have all sorts of rules. You got Texas in there, Tennessee, other states that have state filing requirements. Our office can help with that. Give us a call. So Matt, not too excited, but.
You know, but practical. It matters. Everybody deals with that. And I like, you know, the extension, don't be shy to extend. But I can't believe that. Three-member LLC, $5,800 for 10 months being late. That's just for not filing a piece of paper on time. That's outrageous. But
it is. Now, there is a one-time abatement exemption. So if you're the first time you've ever been late, you can get an exemption one time. So you get out of jail free card one time. But folks, you don't want to plan on that. Save that card. See, if any of you play Monopoly, you want to hold on to that. That's
right.
Golden ticket.
Awesome tip.
Did you watch the Oscars over the weekend, Matt? Could you believe that Coupa. Our accounting firm wouldn't have pulled that. Pricewaterhouse.
You know, I heard that they. I did not watch it. I just heard the debacle of, I guess, La La Land didn't win, which I did enjoy actually, but did not win, and the music was great to that. I love all the music on from that.
Oh, so good.
Yeah, so good. But so who did win though? I just don't remember who didn't win. Who won that? I can't even remember. That's the sad part, huh?
Oh, I forgot it. I can't remember the name of it. Well, anyway. La La Land, loved it. So yeah. Good.
That was like Steve Harvey, he calling out the wrong winner of Miss Universe or Miss USA or whatever. Remember that? That was pretty classic. Oh, gosh.
Well, okay. Well, time to introduce our special guest. It is my honor to introduce Mark Morris to the show today. And he's a specialist in consulting with small business owners and their individual businesses. He's helped large and small business firms around the world. He's an entrepreneur himself. He's founded 3 different ventures and advised hundreds of family, privately owned, backed companies in the restaurant, automotive, insurance, healthcare, real estate, hotel. The list goes on and on. He's also got an MBA from Harvard. Huh, Matt? See?
I've heard of that place.
Yeah.
I've
heard of that. Yeah. And then he's also worked with the consulting firm of Deloitte Consulting and Bain, a huge company. And advised Fortune 500 firms. So a wonderful, beautiful family, wife and 6 kids. And the only drawback in this entire, gosh, amazing bio is he is an Alabama fan. So let's just cut the show up right there.
Well,
yeah.
No, Mark, welcome to the show. Welcome.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for having me. I hope I don't turn off any of your listeners by saying Roll Tide.
Well, they're winners. That's all right. Well, that's okay.
Yeah, although the national championship loss still hurts, so don't bring it up again.
Yeah, that's all right. You know, 99% of college football fans' teams didn't win this year either, so it's okay. Now you know how the rest of us feel.
Yeah. It's a little sad when you don't win your 7th championship, I know, you know. So.
Yeah, I cry for a week. I don't know about you.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh. Well, Mark, thank you for joining us today. We are really excited about this topic about family-owned businesses. And I know when you and I started to get to know each other, this is really something you're passionate about. And we're excited to have you here to share some tips and strategies for many of our listeners around the country have a family mix in their business. May I ask first, what got you kind of in that niche or niche, if you will, of helping family-owned businesses? How did that happen?
Yeah, sure. So initially, I remember being really young. And when I was really young, I remember being with my dad, getting in his truck, leaving off early in the morning, 6 a.m., mom packed peanut butter jelly sandwich, and off we go. And that's kind of how I grew up. I would be on different things with my dad, working with cousins, working with uncles. So I kind of grew up with entrepreneurs all around me. And so it's kind of in my blood.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's good to have that personal background. You can kind of get the family dynamics and what it takes to be successful in a family business. And I don't know, maybe you got some do's and don'ts, some rules of the road or something that you've realized have been really helpful. But maybe what are some of the things when you're talking to, when you're consulting a new business owner, getting into a family business, or maybe someone buying a family business, what are some of the initial advice you give people?
You know, first I think it's really important to recognize that a family business is different than a regular business. And as I think about it, I think it's mostly different in a couple of dimensions. The first dimension is structure. The second dimension is emotion. And the third dimension is expectation. And let me just give you a story to kind of illustrate. So I was working with a family, and I'm really respectful of clients that I've worked with in the past, or anyone I've worked with in the past. So I won't give you any names or details or even industries, but let me just kind of give you the basics. We were working with a family. And I had this sibling come and talk to me, and the basis of the conversation went like this. So you know, I run the business, and I manage the business, and I manage the affairs of the business. I have a sibling, however, who also is in the business. That person is a manager, and that person, you know, has a drug problem. That person also has done some things that would be considered sexual assault, or not assault, but sexual harassment in a typical firm. And we have thought about, hey, how can we manage this risk? We want to manage it from our perspective. We have partners. We want to manage it from their perspective. How can we manage this risk? And my initial advice would be, hey, you got to get rid of him. He's too much of a risk. He could potentially have some issues between you and your fellow partners. It could be issues between you and others. And so as that was being considered, one of the parents shut it down. They said, no way. There's no way in the world we're going to fire this person. And it was so important for them that the emotional integrity of the family was maintained, that that even though that was the most logical thing, even though that was the thing that would normally happen in a typical situation, you might give them help, you might help them try to work through things, but if they had a problem that was chronic, you'd eventually have to let them go. That just wasn't happening. It wasn't going to fly. It wasn't even part of the conversation, because it was a family business.
Yeah,
that's tough. And it makes sense. You know, I'm a parent and have kids now that are in college and running, working in the business from time to time, running their own small businesses, going to college. And you wish the best for your kids. And to think that you've got to fire them from the family business, or you want to usually protect them and help them work through it, encourage that. Mm-hmm. But if you're a sibling trying to hold a business together and it's backfiring, that's got to be tough.
The other side of it, however, Mark, is that on the flip side, you have families who go to their children or go to their brothers or sisters or other people, and they say, hey, I can't pay you a lot right now, but we can put in sweat equity together, and it can be something that we can create together, and it can be magic and beautiful and wonderful and so forth and so on. And on the flip side, you have a huger investment of emotion, and you have the right dynamics of a structure to take on and do something that, you know, typically is hard. Most initial businesses fail, as we know. And so, you know, there is both sides of the coin. Particularly, however, when you think about a family business, there's not just the structure of ownership and the employees, which are two different structures. You also have to consider that family dynamic, which again can be a plus or a minus.
I like it. I Matt, he saved himself because he was going to be Debbie Downer initially. Womp, womp, womp. You know, yeah. Never have a family business. Yeah. And he's like, no, it can be good. You know,
it is good. Though. And it is true. Yeah. I think that your family can be a blessing or a curse in a business, right? I mean, sometimes you get that synergy from the family. You know everybody's strengths. You know their weaknesses. You're all in it together, you know. I think that I've seen a lot of businesses have a lot of success because of that. And there's a lot of love and care.
Yes.
But then on the other hand, if a business has problems and someone's out of line, so to speak, it's like, well, this is family. It's not business, but it is, but it's not. It's just, it's tricky. You got to balance a lot of relationships.
And I remember in Sopranos, the second season, the best way to deal with that. We can't do that. All right. Well, now, so Mark, what do you do in that situation? Let's, you know, we can talk about all the good, and we want to do that too, you know, of how to structure maybe a business with family. And Matt, your tip earlier, succession planning, there's lots of good things to talk about here, but maybe let's focus on some of those hard things. You did talk about that dynamic of the emotional goals of the family and keeping the family together, but maybe an employee or child or family members not carrying their weight. What do? Do you have any suggestions?
Absolutely. Regardless of what you are looking at, I think the solution might be the same, although how you apply it might be different. And so basically you have to realize that you have to manage your family business a little differently. As I think about that, that falls into certain categories. The first is enabling tough conversations. The next is developing processes and documenting those processes. And the final is leveraging advisors. The tough conversations, let me give an example of being with my own dad. And so I remember when I was about 14 years old, and I was in the car with my dad. We had gone somewhere, and my dad was the traditional, male family figure. I'm African American, and so he was, very serious and sometimes really hard to. I felt hard to connect with initially as we interacted. And he, don't get me wrong, great dad, very great provider. And over time, I developed a better relationship with him. But I remember being in that car and having a serious conversation with him and just saying, hey, Dad, I want to have a better relationship with you. And as we had that conversation, he just listened to what I had to say. He didn't say much. And then, we got to home and I left the car and I thought that was that. But over time, things developed and things grew and we, started watching more games together and having more heart-to-heart conversations. And those things were really important to me from lots of perspectives. I was a little older in life, it was really interesting how when he needed something, he could come to me. And so I remember him coming and talking to me about getting a loan for the business, which is something that that I was happy to do. And my dad actually died in 2009. And I remember being, there with him, talking with him. And I specifically remember the nurse coming in one day and saying, hey, Mr. Morris, can I help you with something? And he turning and just saying, oh, don't worry about that. My boy will get that. And I was happy to do it. If we wouldn't have had that tough conversation, I don't know where our relationship would have gone. There are other tough conversations you kind of have to have or need to have. One, for example, is my own wife. So, I have a couple of entities that I work with and own. And one of the things that we have talked about is, what happens if. And so when we've talked, those have been some really good discussions to kind of outline what mm-hmm. she needs to do, what needs to happen, what banks to talk to, who advisors to talk to, kind of giving her a spreadsheet, if you will, of things to do. So that's a tough conversation that we've had to have.
Yeah.
I've had tough conversations with my kids, right? So those are some of the things that some tough conversations you've had.
Well, let's try and get into some examples and practical tips I think any business owner could use. I love how you brought in the spouse there. And you know what's funny is you're talking about all this stuff, I'm thinking of Arrested Development. If you've seen that show where you've got the son, the older son, Michael, who is, runs the family business and he's got his no good sister and Lindsay and two brothers, Job and Buster, who are totally worthless. And but Michael has this burden of running the family business, and he's not married. He's a widow, I think, in the show. But it's a really funny story that plays on a lot of these issues we're talking about. And as you brought up the spouse there, I think a lot of business owners, male or female, they've got a spouse who may not be working the business day to day, but this is a family business. You guys are living off of this income. And what have you seen of some successes maybe of maybe couples or spouses in a business that work well together? How necessary is it for the spouse to be involved? What are some tips? We're just thinking about the spouse in a business.
So those are great questions. I think initially the spouse, sometimes we call them the silent spouse. Because they're kind of like a silent partner, right? Mm-hmm. Even if they have no ownership rights or
mine's
or
not so no, silent.
Well, it's interesting. It depends. It depends on the issue. So sometimes they are, sometimes they aren't. As I've worked with businesses, getting them involved in the process of kind of making decisions is really, really critical. And you might outline some specific decisions that you want to look at. You might look at employment. You might look at compensation. You might look at other things in terms of children development, leadership development in your family. And as you have those conversations, it really becomes about, hey, what is the best for our children? What is the best for us personally as we try to develop? What is best for our employees, which sometimes become pseudo family members? All of those are great questions that lead to win-win results. And so when you sit down with your child, or you sit down with your employee, or you sit down with even your spouse and say, hey, sweetie, I really want to do all I can to help you develop and grow in ways that you want to. Let's talk about that. you know, it's a really, really powerful conversation.
Well, I like the big takeaway that I've already got here from, and I'm going to say it directly because, Mark, you've been saying this, if not directly, but indirectly, is communication.
Yeah.
Communication, when you say what's the difference between a typical business and a family business, yeah, I would have to have the gut feeling that communication has to be even greater and more respected and valued in a family business. Because if you're just running a business and you've got employees, sometimes you can keep more cards to your chest. You can run it like a dictatorship and it's your business. And even if it's you and your spouse running the business, you can say, this is the way we're going to do it. And you and your spouse are hopefully equally yoked and you have a dynamic that works. But when you have kids involved, aunts, uncles, brothers, sisters, if you're not communicating, and I think it was your second point, not only having those hard conversations, which is communicating, but systems where and accountability, where this is your job and here's how you're accountable. Do it right. Do it poorly. Here's the rewards and here's the punishment. And as long as you're communicating that, that's got to create some strength in a family business, I would presume. What are your thoughts?
It absolutely does. In fact, kind of going along those lines of creating processes, you have these processes that you create and implement to manage specific types of communications. Those have to do with where particularly you might see some problems that you can anticipate, employment or compensation or conflict. And so you might develop a system saying, hey, this is how we're going to manage that. And as you actually put it in place, you have to tweak that system. So, you know, for example, I was working with a family and it was really interesting as they were developing and growing, the family decided that, hey, one sibling's no longer in the business. They've moved away. Another sibling is in the business. And so how do we manage things going forward? The one sibling came to the family meeting with the thoughts of, hey, you know, in the past, this person has been someone who has been hard to deal with. In the past, this person was kind of a bully when I was working with them. In the past, all these things that had happened weren't good. And as they actually had the communications about, hey, this is what my concern has been in the past, they were able to work things out so that going forward, they were able to, you know, shift over responsibility in an amicable way.
Mark, what do you think about on addressing the compensation issue? I think sometimes when you get in a family business, you may have siblings, for example, in a family business that are paid differently or that maybe should be paid differently. And I know there's this, you know, it's touchy-feely, I think. I don't know how else to say it, but it's, you know, there's emotion and I guess you care more. It's not just a business relationship that's somewhat disposable. I hate to say it, but, you know, this is family. Family's forever type thing. Mm-hmm. So, but do we treat them? Do we treat them like, you know, when we get down to business, I mean, let's be real. Let's talk about money. Do we get down to business and do we reward people for what they do? Or are we also taking into account, hey, the family together has built this company. We should all be paid the same. How do you deal with compensation? I've had that question of me with even my own family members that have family businesses and clients over the years who really seem to struggle with dealing with compensation amongst family members who do disproportionate work.
Yeah. The truth be told, if you look at most family businesses, about half, if you have multiple siblings in the business, at the end of the day, by the end of the tax year, even if salary-wise they're paid differently, by the end of the tax year with distributions, they're paid the same. And that's just kind of the reality. It really depends on the family and what you want to kind of give and get, if you will. And that silent spouse might be a little more vocal about that. One of the ways or strategies that we've looked at in terms of how to differentiate is creating specific roles that say, hey, if you're in this role, you will earn this. And there's a potential for anyone in the family business who has the capacity and the leadership capability and they're able to be followed in the organization to get that role. And so one day mm-hmm. you could get that too. So that's one way some companies have done it. Another way companies have done it is to say, hey, this is what mom and dad have created. It's worth X, and they will get someone to value that and put a dollar amount on it. And they'll do that every year. And from then on, they'll say, we're going to split the profits based on, you know, what Mike creates or what Joey creates or what Sybil creates. And if Sybil is the CEO and the other two are not involved in the family business, anything she creates on top of that, you know, is mostly hers. And so that's a different way, a different approach of dividing up the the distribution.
Mark, you just reminded me of an example too, and it's not practical in some businesses, but it can oftentimes work, is creating divisions within the business, and you're rewarded based on the productivity of that division. I had a client that was in the cleaning, janitorial, carpet business, and they gave the window cleaning to one of the kids. They gave the carpet cleaning to one of the other kids. And then they did, I think they even had some landscaping, and they said, well, why don't you run with this one of the kids? So they were still a family business, and they still marketed together. They branded the business name together, but each child was rewarded on their production and ability to sell and manage within a certain division. And then that if they didn't succeed, too bad that you had your chance.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. You know, that's actually a great point, Mark. In fact, many companies that are family businesses, they create this great chart. I call it a $1 million chart that basically says, hey, you know, this is how much profit we make, and this is how much growth that is over time. Say that's 15 or even 20%, which is great growth. And this is how much costs that are happening as siblings or their children grow into the family business. And say that's 20, 30, 40, 50%, 100%. And they realize that quickly that in order to maintain growth, to match costs, they're going to have to do some new business development. And in order to do that, they will allow different people and support them in that and help them do leadership training, teach them how to help develop certain businesses that are adjacencies to the family business, but allow them to go out and create on their own so that there can be more profit to share.
Okay, Matt, let me just interject one comment real quick, Max. It's at the tip of my tongue. I think this is interesting. Is don't we need to also have the reality check for some of those listeners out there that guess what? Your business really isn't going to employ all your kids and your grandkids. It just doesn't have the capacity to do that. And even though you have that vision of grandeur, Mark, as you've consulted with family owners and businesses, how do you have that kind of intervention or reality check with business owners?
So this is one of the things that as you think about communications and think about processes, one of the processes you want to create is an employment policy that says this is our process for hiring people. And it basically goes like this. Oftentimes there's a need to either leave the family business, go work somewhere, go and actually prove yourself before coming back into the family business. And if that policy is created far before, you know, Joey or Sybil looks to join the family business, it's no longer personal. It's no longer about, hey, I don't want to hire you. It's more about, hey, this is our policy. So we often tell this story to different people that we work with about a specific family who had, it was created by grandma and grandpa, and eventually it was sold to uncle and aunt, and there are other siblings involved, but all of them made that decision together, and they actually created a family constitution that says, hey, this is how we're going to handle things. This is our employment policy. In order to get employment here, you have to have gone to college, and you have to have proven yourself at another job, and there has to be a role for you, as opposed to, hey, we can just hire anyone that comes under the sun. And so when someone actually came to the family business who wasn't a college graduate, who actually was a college dropout, the uncle said, hey, you know what? I'd love to talk to you about our family business and employment opportunities within it. Here's our employment policy. Your mom and dad have looked at it. They've all signed it. Go read it. Whenever you want to come talk to me, let's talk. And the person took it, and he never came back. But there wasn't this, you know, heartache. There wasn't awkwardness at the Christmas table. It wasn't, hey, I don't like you. Or it wasn't, hey, I'm dad, mom, he didn't hire me. It was, hey, we've already made this decision. A similar thing can be said, honestly, about prenuptial agreements, Mark. So if you set it As soon as engagement happens, boy, it's about that spouse that's joining the family. But if you set that up long time in advance, then there's not this emotional connection. It's no longer personal.
Man, I can't believe Mark goes from Alabama to prenups. I mean, obviously you're a real popular guy, so that's amazing. Man, to throw down the prenup, that's serious. Matt, I know you had a comment. Sorry, I cut you off.
Yeah, what would you say, Mark? I mean, as you've looked at these family businesses, there's just this family relationship dynamic, obviously, that causes unique problems. But what would you say, as you've consulted with family businesses, is the one thing, and maybe it's not one thing, maybe it's two or three, whatever, but the one thing everyone's doing really well in a successful family business? And maybe on the other hand, too, is what's the one thing that seems to blow up family businesses? Wait. That an otherwise successful family business can blow up if you don't watch out for X, you know?
What are your thoughts? Let me first define success, Matt, because family businesses typically define success in one or two ways, sometimes both. One way to define success is economic success. And so you might have families that are greatly economic success. They might have great economic success. Another way to define success is emotional success. So they have a really close, tight bond. And then there are mixtures of those. And so some families have great economic success, but they have really low family buy-in and emotional connection. Another family might have great emotional connection, but they're poor and they don't have very much money. Ideally, you want both, right? Ideally, you want to have great emotional success and great financial success. And those people that do that, those families that do that, they manage both. There is a periodic way they look at and gauge and manage and determine, hey, how are we doing emotionally? How are we doing financially? And they don't just look at one or the other.
That's great. No, I like it. Well, and let's follow it up. And I appreciate it, Mark. You're pausing to let us interject, which is a very professional interviewee skill. Because a lot of interviewees on our show will just keep going on and on and on. But I love how you just defined success. So let me follow it up with Matt's same question. Is there a common characteristic, just off the cuff? I know you know that we do this live, folks. We didn't prepare Mark with these questions. Is there just something come to mind as maybe the one of the most common characteristics of the families that are doing it right?
So here's two ways to manage it. The first way is to have these conversations that we've talked about, and as we've had these conversations, to document that, and as you document it, actually put it into practice. And so here's an example of putting it into practice. A father walks into a meeting one day that involves his children and his siblings, and he is the leader of the family business, and he says something to the effect of, hey, I've finally got to the point. I've got my number. I'm retiring today. You guys figure it out. Now, he's not really retiring, but he's basically putting them through a fire drill. And they start going through the motions of what they would do if he just walked out the door today. And so doing those things and actually writing them down is one level, but actually putting it into practice and actually looking and changing it over time so that the process is the manager, not the people. So if mom or dad or whoever is the key leaves, you can maintain. That's critical. And then the second one that we can talk about in just a second has to do with advisors. And so we can talk about that in just a second.
Yeah, we probably should wrap up on advisors. I know that's an important point here. But I want to just reiterate what Mark said. One of the notes that I wanted to cover today that I thought, what can I contribute to this show? And you just said it, is documentation. You know, it's funny when Matt and I consult with thousands of clients. Between the two of us, we'll meet with almost 1,500 clients throughout the year on one-on-one consults. And we constantly harp on get it in writing, and the problems that come with a partnership not putting it in writing. But one of the common problems that plagues small business owners that are family businesses, they think they can do it on a handshake. You know, it's family. Mm-hmm. And folks, if there's one business that should be documenting it, is the family business, because everybody remembers the conversation around the dinner table differently. And I like how you said You communicate, you get a system, you have a plan, and you document it. And folks, if you think you can cut corners with a family business, you're tricking yourself. You're lying to yourself.
Yeah, that's exactly right. The second thing, as we kind of talked about that, is getting help to do that. And that's where advisors come in. And those can be people that you already have as advisors. Those can be people that you bring to the table. There's a story told by one of my colleagues, by one of his mentors knew he was going to have this tough conversation with his family. And so he arrived. And when he arrived, he said, "Hey, I think we're going to have a tough conversation today." And so he pulled out a baseball bat and he put on a catcher's helmet and he put on the catcher's gear, right, to kind of illustrate, hey, this is going to be a rumble, if you will. So, you know, having someone else to facilitate that conversation can also be very helpful.
Yeah. You know, what's funny is we've even had some clients that have, and I've seen this in businesses where, someone needs to be fired. They bring in the outside consultant, even for some of the dirty work, you know. So one of the things I think is really important, particularly in a family business, is getting an outsider's perspective. Sometimes in a family, you all think the same, right? You're maybe raised the same, you have the same values, you have a similar life experience. And so getting an outsider's perspective is probably a little more valuable in a family business. And I think sometimes the family businesses, unfortunately, too, let's get Bob. He's got an accounting degree, or Susie watches a lot of Law and Order, so surely she can handle the legal work, you know, or whatever it may be. Everybody seems to have this dream, and let's just let them go at it. But if this was, Susie that worked in your office, you'd never let her do the legal documents. So, but I think family businesses particularly get a lot of value from outsider professionals coming in to help advise the business, and it helps in succession planning. So love that comment. Think it's really important. Mark, did you have any final questions? Kohler?
Yeah. Well, Mark, you're an advisor helping people around the country. Would you be willing to give out your contact information for anybody that might want to retain you for a tough conversation with their family or whatever you'd like?
Sure. No problem. I can be reached at Mark, M-A-R-K, dot Morris, M-O-R-R-I-S, at Morelta, M-O-R-E-L-T-A, dot com.
Right, Mark.Morris at Morelta.com. We'll put that in our announcement next week on the newsletter of how you can reach him. The fantastic conversation. This exceeded even my expectations of a great show. This has been really deep. And because I think all of us as business owners want to leave a legacy, get our family involved, and it's just crazy. And so, Mark, tell us some of your final thoughts or takeaways, anything you'd like to add here.
Final thought is, at the end of the day, ultimately, when people start a business, they want it to help their family. They want it to sustain the family. They want it to protect the family. It would be a shame if you don't do the things that will enable that, as opposed to not managing it, so it's the thing that tears the family apart. And so I think that's the key is, we want that high success in terms of financial success, but also the emotional success as well.
Yeah, it's very well said, very important. I think it's not just about the business in terms of, what we think in the business world, so to speak, of going out and making money. I love that comment there. Well, thanks everyone for listening. We're going to be back next week with another great episode of Refresh Your Wealth. And remember, if you love the show, please go to iTunes and give us a 5-star review on iTunes. It helps other people find the show. And of course, Mark and I will be grateful if you let us know. We'll send you a free copy of one of our books, your choice. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.